We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
From Pod World Headquarters, this is the Carolina Insider from Learfield IMG College.
We're back. Time for another edition of the Carolina Insider. Jones and Adam here with you. Adam, I have a statement I would like to release. It's Friday.
It's Friday, Friday. Gotta get down on Friday. Everybody's looking forward to the weekend. Weekend. Partying, partying. Partying, partying. Fun, 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 fun. Looking forward to the weekend.
Whoa, boy. We have a very special episode of the podcast today, Adam.
This is a heavy podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. We have a lot of serious topics to discuss. We're brought to you, by the way, as you know, by our friends at LS Tractor. What's it about for you? LSTractorUSA.com to learn more. So we have two interviews, three interview subjects. We're coming at you from all angles with interviews today. Interview number one, we are going to take the audio from our interview with Garrison Brooks and Howard Lee, both of whom have been on this podcast before. We spoke to those two gentlemen on Carolina Insider Live yesterday, and don't forget, Thursdays at 1 o'clock, if you missed it live, you can check out the on-demand version. It's available both on Facebook and Twitter, actually available on YouTube as well, so you can check it out there if you missed it. But Adam, we will have the audio of that conversation concerning all of the social and racial tensions and issues that have been occurring over the last week and a half, 2 weeks in our country, in this state in general. We get a current student athlete in Garrison Brooks. We hear his opinion. Howard Lee, former state senator, former mayor of Chapel Hill. He has was a large part of the civil rights movement in this area. He has fought a large majority of his life for social justice. So we get a more historical perspective from him. And I hope people will listen to the conversation because I think it was productive.
If you are a fairly longtime listener of the pod, you already know that Howard Lee is awesome because he was on with us, I think it was January 7th of this year. So that's why we thought of him, because he was so good in this format and really makes you think about almost everything he says, and says it in a way that is easily digestible. And then Garrison Brooks, who we've also had on here multiple times, and it's been incredible how much he has grown and matured just in his time here at Carolina.
Yes.
And I'm not like patting him on the head saying, good job, Garrison. But I think it's fair to say when he arrived here as a freshman, he did not have a lot to say. And I think he wasn't confident enough yet in himself to say those things, which most of us aren't as college freshmen. Now, go look at him or listen to him here in a couple minutes as a rising college senior. That's pretty incredible. That's what college is supposed to do. That's what college athletics is supposed to do. It's supposed to enable folks to learn about things they didn't know about and develop an opinion and develop that confidence to speak their mind. And I'm sure there's some people thinking, oh, Jones and Adam, I don't listen for this. Why would you want to talk about this? This is supposed to be an escape. I get that. But I also think this is something that's important to so many of the people who you've heard on here as guests.
Yes.
And so if you want to cheer them on at the Smith Center or Karen Shelton Stadium or Keenan Stadium or Boshimer Stadium or wherever, if you want to cheer them on there, I think you've got to at least listen to what's important to them. You don't have to agree, and you shouldn't be required to agree, but I do kind of feel like you should be required to listen because you're willing to invest in them in this other way and tell them they're awesome for dunking a basketball. Well, when they walk out the door, they go live a life outside of what you see. Aren't you interested in knowing about that? So that's why it's on here, I think, because it's important. It's just important to hear what is important to them. And as you know, we're both around college athletes a lot. Sometimes they talk about stuff I don't know anything about, and I don't really care. But I have to at least know and understand what's important to them so that then I can talk to them. And that's all we're trying to do. And you know who would have said that a lot better? Howard Lee, because he's awesome.
I was just thinking that was pretty good. I was thinking, what can I say after this?
Well, okay, as long as we're on this topic, I got another thing.
Okay.
So we talk about Dean Smith on here a lot, and we mentioned this on the video pod, and this is something I've been thinking a lot about, because I think, remember when we went over and looked at the Dean Smith collection at the library, and
yes,
there were the letters that made it very clear he was seriously thinking about running for senator?
Yes.
And we both said, I don't know that he could have been elected, given the politics of the state and his politics at the time. But we talk about Dean Smith a lot in 2020 with Carolina Athletics. And I don't pretend to know him especially well, but I feel like both you and I have studied him relatively closely. We weren't personal friends of his. And I think if we're going to be willing to talk about, oh, I love, and the thing that we talk about most now in 2020 is less about basketball and more about the other stuff, I feel like. Starting with the Presidential Medal of Freedom, I feel like the Dean Smith conversation expanded beyond the basketball court. And we talk about him a lot in that way on here and in various other formats. Well, if you're going to be proud of that and you're going to hold that up as a point that you have some pride in, then I think you have to be willing to consider, what would he say today in 2020? And I think he would not say, based on what little I know, oh, just forget it, don't worry about it, it's not that big a deal. I think he would say, you're at least required to listen. And then form your own opinion, because we're not all the same. But you at least, every former player who sat in Pod World headquarters with us has talked about how Coach Smith was interested in them as a person, not as a basketball player. And that's one of the things that's most profound to them, however many years removed they are from playing for North Carolina. Well, these are people who are talking. And I think we're supposed to be interested in them for that reason, and not how many assists a game did you average, and what do you have to say as a person? And I may not agree with it, but I would at least like to hear it.
I think related but different is something that you will hear Howard Lee and Garrison Brooks talk about, Adam, is words versus action. And Coach Smith was more than just the words. He was the action to what he believed. And again, we're not telling you what to believe, but it was more than just saying it. It was truly living it. And running his program that way. And I think that's important to keep in mind.
And there's a misconception that, well, he could do that because he was Dean Smith. He was doing it before he was ever Dean Smith. He was doing it when he was being hung in effigy and was right, about one loss away from being fired. I think that's the distinction that a lot of people don't get. They think, oh, well, if you've built up the credit that Dean Smith has, you can afford to take these stands. What made him Dean Smith is he took the stands before he had any credit in the bank. And so I just think that's something I think about a lot when I think about issues like this, is if I'm going to write some story where I talk about, oh, Coach Smith's influence on the athletic department still very prevalent, is it? And if it's not, what can I do to try to at least expand that a little bit? And I just think the answer is you just have to listen. You don't have to agree. I don't understand why that's so hard to understand. You're probably not going to convince that other person that you're right. But you can at least see what they're saying. I don't understand why that's so hard.
So I do think this is a productive and good conversation with Howard Lee and Garrison Brooks coming up. If it is one you have already heard, if you joined us on the live pod, or if you've watched an on-demand version of that and want to skip through that, don't worry. We have another interview as well, Adam.
Which is another barn burner, by the way.
We have the athletic director here at Carolina, Bubba Cunningham, joining us. Bubba's been on plenty of times. But, Adam, there are some major events occurring right now, most notably, A, the social things that are happening, which are going to affect the student-athletes and coaches at Carolina. Bubba talks about that. Name, image, and likeness, which Bubba has been in the news some for some comments that he made this week. And let me strongly encourage you, if you only read the headline of the Dennis Dodd article that came out earlier this week, or you've only seen a tweet about it and you don't understand what's going on, please listen, because I think Bubba does a terrific job explaining his position when it comes to name, image, and likeness. And then also, of course, in the background somehow all of a sudden, Adam, is this whole process of getting people back onto campus and getting the university and the athletic department closer to running back to a normal work environment, considering the coronavirus and everything that everybody's living through for the last 3 months. So some very big topics on his plate right now.
The social issues, coronavirus, name, image, and likeness. I think when you think about each one of those independently, you think, that could be a tenure-defining type issue for an athletic director. They're all happening simultaneously, all three. That would be a lot of issues in a 15-year career. They're all happening right now.
So we're going to have Garrison Brooks and Howard Lee and then Bubba Cunningham, all those interviews coming up in just a moment. A reminder that it's always a great day to be a Tar Heel. The UNC GAA celebrates that feeling every day, serving Carolina's more than 336,000 living alumni and more than 66,000 GAA members. You are a student for a few years, but you are an alumni forever. Alumni.unc.edu. Let's get to the Garrison Brooks and Howard Lee interview. And we're going to come out of that. I want to go through some dates with you about the reopening of the athletic department, because we do talk about that with Bubba, but don't get into dates specifically, but we'll give those to you. And then we'll let you hear that interview. But first, the interview with Garrison Brooks and Howard Lee. Again, this was from the Carolina Insider Live podcast. That is Thursdays, 1 o'clock. We stream on Facebook, the Carolina Athletics Facebook page, and stream on Twitter via the @GoHeels handle, not the Carolina podcast handle, the @GoHeels handle, the full athletic department Twitter feed. And our interview, as always, brought to you by the Atma Hotel Group, new owners of the Sheraton Chapel Hill and Courtyard by Marriott Chapel Hill. Okay, here's Garrison Brooks and Howard Lee from the Carolina Insider Live.
I think one of the things we all enjoy about Carolina basketball is that for the last 60 or so years, it's been about more than just Carolina basketball. And that's what we wanted to talk about today, and that's why we've invited Garrison Brooks and Howard Lee to be here with us. You probably know both these gentlemen. Garrison Brooks, going to be a senior, hard to believe, Garrison, on this coming year's Carolina basketball team. Howard Lee, you may have heard him on the Carolina Insider podcast back this winter. former mayor of Chapel Hill. He's been involved in every aspect of really life in North Carolina over the past couple decades. So thank you to both of you for joining us. And Mr. Lee, I wanted to start with you. How have you experienced this last week or so? What have you seen that feels familiar and unfamiliar to you?
Well, certainly a lot of what's going on feels very familiar. Unfortunately, a part of it is like reliving a bad movie because many of the experiences that have been highlighted, I have lived through growing up in the South near the Atlanta area. And as a college student, when I looked at how Floyd was being treated by the police, it brought back memories of when I had a gun pointed to my head and a threat to blow it off if I said one more word. So that was bad. But also, I've seen this reaction by people through the years on many occasions, but this feels a little different than what the previous ones felt to me. I think that there is a combination of things that is creating a level of desperation and a commitment on the part of people to try and bring this these problems to a level of where they can no longer be ignored. Because unfortunately, through the years, many leaders have ignored, made promises, and then did not carry out those promises. And that's leaving people very frustrated.
Garrison, I'd be interested in kind of the same question that Adam asked Mr. Lee, just your experience over the last week or week and a half, the feelings and emotions that you've had. And then after hearing what Mr. Lee said, and if you have any questions for him.
So pretty much my experience this past week has been pretty rough. I mean, I've been standing up a lot, just thinking, like, why is this happening to Black people? And, like, what can we do to really change this? I mean, unfortunately, like, the riots and the looting happens, but I think the protest is a good way to get our voices heard and really just express ourselves in the manner that everybody can understand that we're frustrated with what's happening and something should change. And Mr. Lee, I was wondering if you could give us, this generation, any type of advice of what we should do or what we could do to really push for change and really make change happen, what would it be?
Well, I would start with getting involved in local community activities, but more importantly and more specifically, getting registered and then voting. Because to me, that is the first tool we have to bring about change, but voting for the right people, not just having a knee-jerk reaction to vote for whoever is on the ballot. So that's one. But I go back to the fact that this is not new for UNC students and for young people. There are many young people who've been involved for quite a long time, but certainly not enough. When I ran for lieutenant governor in 1976, college students were certainly there, but more importantly, college students were the ones who helped me get elected mayor in 1969. So I would like to see more involvement of young people because through the last few years, I have seen a kind of a diminishment of college students as well as high school students being involved in community activities. So register, vote, and then try to find ways to engage in the community. I'm extremely pleased with what has happened at UNC, and because UNC has always been a little on the cutting edge of engaging beyond just athletics. And through Coach Smith and then Coach Williams, you guys have really done more than just played basketball. You have absolutely contributed to the community.
Garrison, you're obviously a Carolina basketball player, and when we see you on the court in the Smith Center, we see the reception you get there, and we think that must be pretty great, quite honestly, that everybody's cheering you on and loves you so much. How is your experience different when we're not seeing you, when you're not on the court in the Smith Center, and you're just going about your daily life the other 335 days of the year that maybe we don't see?
So truthfully, it normally goes well. I'm not gonna lie, like it's typically around the community in Chapel Hill, Carborough area, where really appreciated for the hard work put in on the basketball court and how we represent the university. But I think like the past couple of days, I mean, I feel like our group, our basketball team, and some of our student athletes haven't been appreciated as much for really just telling how they feel and what feel like telling how what they think is best for us, and also just expressing like their discomfort and their vulnerability of being African American in America. And I think that's one of the things that fans have a tough time understanding sometimes, that we have emotions and we're people also, and we can express how we feel even outside of the court. I think that's something that we as people should understand, that everyone has an opinion and everyone has the right to state their own opinion about things.
Mr. Lee, you mentioned that you've lived through some of these similar circumstances before. How was some progress made in the civil rights era in the 60s? Obviously, we still have a long way to go, but there was some progress made then. How was progress made then that we can learn from and hopefully try to replicate that now?
There's no question that tremendous progress has been made as a result of the activities of the civil rights era and, of course, subsequent years. And we can point to many significant achievements. I think the concern is that people don't tend to sustain the level of commitment that results in systemic change. We have not seen the continuous systemic change that needs to occur. For example, we know that we've seen a switch between the Democratic and Republican Party when it comes to making laws. And we make a lot of lip service about change, but when you look at the whole economic picture, that economic picture has still not been opened in a way that it allows people who are minorities to have full access to the resources. When we look at the fact that our communities are still segregated, when we have people living in the Black community and living across town in a more affluent community, it leaves people out a great deal. So I think what we tend to do is to celebrate small achievements without recognizing those achievements are not resulting in ongoing permanent change that needs to occur. And I make one final point. I know that there are people who said to me through the years, you can't legislate attitudes. And that's where the problem is. It's an attitude people tend to express. They'll express positive attitude when things are happening that they feel good about, but then they don't carry that through back in their own communities to try to bring about change there. They'll ignore what's going on in their own communities, in the schools. They'll ignore it in the community itself. They won't stand up a lot of times and fight for the extension of water and sewer into the Black community that sometimes is left out of the paved streets. And I can go on and on because that is still a major problem if you look around and see what's happening.
Mr. Lee, when you were on with us before, you told us if you treat people with respect, most often they'll return that respect. For both of you, I just wonder, why does it seem so hard in 2020 to just get that respect and just listen for just a minute? How can we do that better?
I think certainly the important thing is to have people talk directly with each other. You know, doing this isolation and quarantine process because of the virus, that is the one thing that I have missed interacting with my friends. People tend to want to talk about pleasant things, but not certainly about the unpleasant aspects of it. And I think we're going to have to talk, but we've got to go beyond talking. We have to act in a way that it forces people to behave in a certain way. And I don't care whether people like me or not. It's whether or not they respect me. And I engender that by, first of all, respecting people. And I think I've shared with you all that there are a number of people with whom I disagreed, but still had a very positive relationship with. And I think if I do that, then that makes me feel good, but I can't take responsibilities for others who refuse to do it.
Garrison, what about you? Who have you learned from and listened to during your getting close to 4 years at Carolina here? What are some things you've learned about that maybe you didn't necessarily agree with, but you at least appreciated the opportunity to learn about?
I think one of the biggest things I've learned since I was at Carolina, Sean May talks about this all the time. I mean, just human decency and just treating everybody with respect, and really, like, you don't have to agree with everyone you work with, and you don't really have to particularly like them, like Mrs. Lee said, but you have to have a certain type of respect for them and really understand what they say and why they feel that way. I think that we also do a lot of talking during this generation and right now, because they feel like it's good and they feel like communication gets things done. But truthfully, actions, we need actions behind those words. And I think that's what we're lacking right now, that we just really need action behind promises that people give us and promises to change things around our communities and like our challenges to really better our communities.
Mr. Lee, I'd like to ask this question to both you guys, but I'll start with you. Adam and I are in a different demographic than you are, than Garrison is. What is something that you would say to somebody like Adam or me that could be helpful, that could be beneficial, that we could do to help move this process forward where we all want it to be? And Garrison, I want to ask you too, but I'll start with Mr. Lee.
Well, I think one thing is that there is value in being inquisitive. That is, trying to learn more about people and then trying to understand what their experiences have been and then relating that to one's own experience. But also, sometimes it's better to just listen and let people talk about themselves, because that way you'll get an indication of what's inside of the individual and can respond in that fashion. But to also engage in areas that make you uncomfortable. For example, I've had friends who've said to me, I just can't get comfortable, for example, going in an environment where I'm the minority and I'm not accustomed to being it, and so it makes me very uncomfortable. Sometimes that to me is a learning experience, because I have certainly benefited personally from being in an environment where I was the minority. But then I've been accustomed to that through life. So I think people like you and the two of you can certainly be valuable in simply making oneself available to engage with friends and family, and not be uncomfortable when you're at the dinner table with some of your relatives who may be espousing the kind of language that you know is wrong, and then you not say anything and you sit there and accept it.
Garrison, I know it's not easy to follow Howard Lee when he's answering a question about race relations, but I'll ask the same question to you. What are some positive things that just Adam and I or someone like us could do to help this process?
Some of the most positive things that's been helpful to me is just understanding, listening to learn rather than listening to respond. I believe that if you just listen and hear our pain and hear what we go through sometimes is really good. And I mean, unfortunately, you really won't be able to feel that, and you'll never really truly be able to understand. But the thing is, you can empathize, really listen, and try to get a better understanding. I think that as a minority, people don't really get a truthful, like, understanding of what it is to be the minority. But I believe that if people really listen and try to empathize and really try to better educate themselves on what's going on in America for us minority people, I think that they'll get a better understanding and be able to really understand about what's going on and how to help us.
Yeah, I want to add one other thing. I think one of the great assets that all of us have is being truthful. Sometimes we find ourselves sugarcoating because we don't want to insult people. We don't want to make them uncomfortable. when we know that their behavior is certainly not the behavior that that one should embrace. I'm looking at the protests. I'm very supportive of the protests, and I think it's going to have some important positive impacts going forward. But I am not going to tolerate and not speak out against those people who are destroying and who are looting. That, to me, is breaking the law. And I will not ever support or condone people breaking the law in the name of talking about bringing about change. That's just not and so sometimes people will say, yeah, but you see, you have to recognize that their experience has been that they've been not a part of the system. So this is the only way they can speak out. That is simply not true. And I think if you let that go and not do something about challenging it, it is the wrong thing to do. I've always challenged, and I will do that.
Garrison, what do you think about that? Because I think hearing those words from Mr. Lee, it's your generation, I think, who's more likely to say, we're frustrated and this is the only way we know how to show it. When you hear Mr. Lee say he's not necessarily on board with that, what do you think?
I mean, me and Mr. Lee can agree to disagree, but some people believe it's right. I mean, I don't think that's, I don't understand. I don't steal. I don't take stuff that's not mine. So I can't understand that. But some people believe like this is the way we can be heard and this is the way our voices will be heard somehow. And like, I believe that you have the right to really show like this is the way you want to be heard. That's fine. This is America. You're supposed to do what you want to do. This is the way people want to be heard. But I wouldn't do it. But those people are more than welcome to do it. But I don't particularly agree with it. But they believe that this is where they want to be heard, and they're gonna keep going on with it.
Yeah, I think one thing we have to certainly highlight and keep pounding on is that I can't break the law and then get angry with you when you break the law. That I have to abide by the law, and then I can hold you accountable for it. I really do believe that the law is the greatest strength we have in our society to be able to protect each other. Unfortunately, this law has not been applied equally to Black folk, and still race is the main culprit in our society that engenders bad behavior by certain individual policemen. Not all policemen, just certain individuals. What I get frustrated about is that we put in laws, like we say to policemen, you got to wear a body camera, and then they turn the body camera off, and then we do nothing about that. And that's what bothers me about the leadership today, is that we put in laws, we expect them to protect people, and then we don't enforce the law. And that's part of what's bringing about what we're experiencing today.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that we just, at this time, we really need to hold everyone more accountable for their actions and really just make it like we have to make an example out of someone just so it could be better for us.
Garrison, I want to turn this forward a little bit. You're returning to campus, you and your teammates here in the coming weeks. What dialogue would you like to have with your teammates, with your classmates, when people are fully returned, or as fully as we can be right now, to Chapel Hill and to Carolina? What kind of dialogue would you like to have with those guys?
So pretty much we had a meeting last night, and I just wanted to tell everyone that your voices are being heard on somebody's platform. Just keep educating yourselves on what's going on, and if you say something, know what you're talking about. And don't be scared. You cannot be scared to voice your opinion, regardless of who doesn't like you for it and who's gonna like you, who's gonna like you more about it. But the thing is, like, we have to keep using our platform, the platform that the people have given us. So we have to use it for a positive manner for once, and not just talk about materialistic things that need to happen for a change for our better our people. But now the nerve-wracking thing is this. I remember it was a couple years ago, where the KKK was standing on Franklin Street around the Silent Sam. I think that's I think that's pretty crazy, the fact that those people are allowed to bear arms on campus. I'm going to come peacefully protest and really voice my opinion, use my platform, just show people that I care for Black people and want to receive change. But I think it's very uncomfortable, and I think that should change, that people are allowed on campus to do things like that. And I don't think that's right, because, I mean, truthfully, it could scare people off. It could scare people off to not even want to come to school here, because UNC prides itself on diversity, and we should really look into that. Because, I mean, if I want to come back to campus this summer, start a peaceful protest, and those are things you have to think about. You have to think about the people that's really going to be included in it. You have to think about how it affects everyone else, and also think about the people that could really interrupt this because they don't agree with you.
As both of you are well aware, at Carolina, we're proud of Dean Smith. We're proud of what he did in the 1960s, and we like still talking about it today. What do we need to do today to make sure we're not just saying, hey, remember when Dean Smith did that in the 60s? That was awesome what he did. What can we do in 2020 to take that example and move it forward?
Well, I certainly think that it's important for people who are in position of influence to be willing to use that influence. It's unfortunate, but human behavior tends to seek levels of comfort, and one level of comfort is people are quiet in the face of not challenging wrongdoing. But we as individuals can indeed make a difference, because we can start a movement like Dr. King started. And I think that all of us have an obligation to speak out against wrong and to fight against people who are behaving badly and not be uncomfortable about doing that. That's basically where I see us having to do that. I think it is unfortunate people keep referring to Dean Smith and what he achieved, because he could have lost his job, he could have lost his income, but he was willing to put it on the line. What I'm not seeing today are a lot of people who are willing to do that. Dr. King lost his life, and I'm not seeing people who think that it might be worth it to do it. Now, I'm not suggesting people go out and be dumb and be stupid, but I'm also suggesting that you got to stand up and do what is right.
Garrison, kind of to that point, what has Coach Williams talked to you guys about? And this is not the only sensitive topic that has occurred since you've been a player at Carolina. When there are topics like this that come up, what is that dialogue with Coach Williams to you guys?
Coach Williams is always really honest with us, and he's really adamant about how he feels about certain things. I think he supports us as long as we educate ourselves and know what we're talking about and not just doing it because we're obligated to do it or feel like we should have to do it because people push us in that way. But I feel like he's one of those people that he supports us no matter what. I mean, I know that for a fact because, I mean, I spoke out against the Silent Sam protest, and he really agreed with me. He stood by me, and he pretty much helped me go along with it and really educate myself on that.
I want to say that I'm extremely pleased with the actions of several of our coaches in the state. Coach Dorn at State and Coach Williams at UNC and Coach Moulton at NCCU and Coach Brown here at UNC. Those are the ones that come to mind. I'm sure there are others that I've missed. Have stood up and really spoken out very strongly in the face of what we are experiencing today. I think that is admirable, and we have to commend them for doing that, because that has not always been the case with coaches being willing to do that. And they know full well when they do it that there will be members of their alumni base that will be strongly in disagreement and will be strongly critical of what they're doing. But I think there comes a time when you have to look in the mirror and ask if I am part of the problem or part of the solution. And I'm proud of what these coaches have done up to this point.
There will come a point at some point in the next weeks or months where this is no longer the number one story that we see every night that we turn on the news. When that occurs, what can Jones do? What can I do to make sure we're still, as Mr. Lee just said, being educated and thinking about this in a way that, even though it's not the lead story on the news every night, we're still trying to do something to move it forward.
Go ahead, Garrison.
I was also gonna let you take that.
Well, I do think I've always got an answer, Garrison. That's the one thing you don't want to do is let a politician start talking. I've always felt that we tend to go on about our lives once the pressure is off, and that's part of what's been destroying the progress that we think we are making. And it happens with politicians, it happens with general citizens, and people move on with their lives. I think it is important for us to look around and see where there are voids that we need to fill and be willing to do that. I can't have any specifics right now, but I do know that based on what I'm feeling in conversation, and I've been on a lot of video conferences and calls, I'm feeling that there is a different attitude that is developing now that we can build on and move forward. I think it's the coronavirus has forced a lot of pent-up energy in people, and that energy is going to burst out somewhere. Unfortunately, this is how it's bursting out, and it was a spark that started a fire in a dry birth where there was a need for more people. So I think it's important for us to be alert, to be sensitive, and to find, when we find problems, to be able to speak out against those problems. Dialogue to me is one way to do it, but action ultimately is the profound way to make change.
Again, we appreciate Howard Lee's time, Garrison Brooks's time, and just two really good representatives, Adam, of an experience that's different than our experience. And so to be able to hear both from Garrison, a younger person who is maybe experiencing this in a more public way for the first time, not for the first time, you understand what I'm saying, and Howard Lee, who's been doing this for a long time, to hear from both of those gentlemen is, I think, was educational.
That's what college is supposed to do. It's supposed to open your doors to people like that. And what you didn't see or hear in that interview was how excited Garrison was to get to talk to Howard Lee. Not to talk to us, for some reason.
Nah.
But to probably because he's done it so many
times
before. But to get to talk to Howard Lee, he was excited. And he told us in advance of the interview, hey, I've got some things I want to talk about with him. I want to get his opinion on some things. And I thought it was really nice that he was able to do that.
One other thing also that you did not see on the live pod, nor did we have the audio here, was what happened when we stopped the interview.
That was great.
I wish we had stopped the camera, because Howard Lee was so complimentary of Garrison Brooks.
So we don't have that audio even. That audio is down the rabbit hole.
I'm sure we have it somewhere, Adam.
I bet Ken Cleary's got it.
Hey guys, it's Jones. Adam's right. Ken Cleary was nice enough to find the audio for us of a quick exchange between Garrison and Howard Lee after our interview on the Carolina Insider Live. Here it is.
It sure is hard following you up with an answer.
Garrison, you have to accept that I've got a few years on you. I've been practicing a little longer, so, but keep pushing and I'm counting on you being one of those great success stories going forward, as you have been successful at this point. So keep pushing. I am so impressed with your expression and the way you carry yourself and the fact that you've got some really in-depth thinking going on inside of you. And I hope you'll let it burgeon its way out.
I appreciate it, Mr. Lee.
Adam, Bubba Cunningham. As we mentioned, Bubba's got a lot going on right now. Part of this discussion that you're about to hear, brought to you by the Atma Hotel Group, new owners of the Sheraton Chapel Hill, Courtyard by Marriott Chapel Hill, is the return to campus. And wanted to give you just, Carolina released this last week, wanted to give you these specific dates if you haven't seen it. So June 1st, which was Monday, the facility staff members returned to campus for UNC Athletic Department. So to get the facilities ready for more people to return.
Tom, what up?
That's right. June 8th, that is this upcoming Monday, sports medicine staff returns. June 12th, which is a week from today, coaching staffs for football, men's basketball, women's basketball begin to return. And there will be testing aspects involved as well for the coronavirus as these folks return, and then they can fully return if the test comes back negative. Then from June 12th to July 1st, football student athletes will begin returning in separate groups. June 15th, strength and conditioning, equipment, administrative staff begin to return. June 22nd, coaching staffs for the fall sports that are not football. That's field hockey, volleyball, men's and women's soccer, cross country. July 6th, men's and women's student athletes, men and women basketball student athletes. July 13th, the other fall student athletes. That's, again, field hockey, volleyball, men's and women's soccer, cross country. And then August 3rd, everybody else comes back as far as coaches and student athletes. So a staggered approach to the return with the emphasis, Adam, on football first. It's your largest team and a team that plays in the fall, then men's basketball, women's basketball, and then also the fall Olympic fall sports returning sooner than the rest. So a staggered approach. Bubba will talk more about this, but just wanted to give you some dates so you had that in your mind when you heard Bubba talking about it.
As he said, no handbook for this.
Right.
So, well, in some ways, we'll have to see. But this is what the best minds have come up with. And I know one thing for sure. The coaches and the student athletes are more excited than they have ever been. You know, they always talk about, I can't wait to get out there in the summer. And secretly they're thinking, I wouldn't mind having a couple weeks off. They are very excited to get back here to Chapel Hill and get going again.
All right. So another really good interview. This one's with Bubba Cunningham. Let's get to that. And we're coming back. Adam has a list.
Yes.
I have one item on my list that has nothing to do with the Tar Heels. So buckle up for that too. All coming up after this on the Carolina Insider.
Our guest today has got a lot going on. A whole lot going on. Bubba Cunningham, how's your life been these last few months?
It's been great. It's been great. There's not a lot going on. So it's, you know, you drive into the office, there's not a lot of traffic. You get in the office, there's nobody there. So it's been pretty quiet.
I wanted to commend you. I've been getting great parking spots lately, and I assume that's because of the great work I've been doing. So I appreciate that you were able to do that for me.
One of the biggest challenges on college campus is parking. But boy, we got plenty right now, and there are spots available.
We've got it figured out. Just have nobody here, then we can all park. Bubba, there's obviously a lot going on around Carolina, around college athletics, and there's several topics we want to talk about. Let's start with just kind of the social issues that are occurring right now. And Adam and I had a chance earlier this week to speak to Garrison Brooks and to also former North Carolina State Senator Howard Lee, who we've had here on the podcast as well in person before, and heard their perspective and some of their stories and their feelings on these subjects. As the man who leads an athletic department that has student athletes, a large majority, particularly in basketball and football, are African-Americans, how do you try to make sure that that dialogue is open within Carolina athletics?
Well, it's a great question. And think about what you had just said. Yeah. You know, it is a incredibly difficult time, a challenging time. Emotions, anxiety, fear are at an all-time high. And yet, we sit here in Chapel Hill at North Carolina with those two people that you talked about. Garrison Brooks, a current student athlete, an outstanding young man that is a terrific basketball player, and Howard Lee, a former mayor, former person that has really shaped this community. And we have the opportunity to talk to them and to really set our own future based on a historical perspective and today's perspective. So that's the really cool thing, I think, about Carolina. But it is sad. I had a call just yesterday with a lot of folks on our staff, And the words I mentioned, fear, anxiety, and those. But the one I kept hearing the most was exhaustion, particularly for our African-American community. They're exhausted. What has happened in the last 2 weeks has been painful to everyone, but they've carried a heavy burden, more so than we have. And so it does. So part of the quietness of the campus, it allows us a chance to reflect and think about what does the future look like and how are we going to build it together and how are we going to build it so that we can fulfill the dreams that they've had, that we've promised them and everyone else, that we have to heretofore have left unfulfilled. So what I want to do in this year is I really want to give voices to our student athletes, give them an opportunity to express their feelings, their thoughts, their ambitions, and what they think a better world should look like. And I also want our staff to do the same thing. So I'm actually putting together a plan right now that's not completed, and so I don't want to go through the whole thing right now, but within the next week we'll have one that will allow our students to express themselves fully. And we'll have to figure out where is the best place to do that. How can they get engaged into the community so that they can do it effectively and will have a lasting impact? So as I mentioned, there is a lot going on, and but that there's nothing more important than that, providing opportunities and hope for people that really have been disadvantaged. And we have to think about our policies and our laws and the way we have conducted business throughout the country and figure out ways to make it better for the underrepresented group.
Adam mentioned this, I think, on the live podcast earlier this week, where there have been some coaches that have made some missteps, and people kind of, oh, he's doing it wrong or she's doing it right. And it's not about that. It's much more about how can everybody keep that conversation going. The point of me bringing this up is, do you talk to your coaches at all about, hey, guys, this is how we want to approach this? Do you rely on them as individuals to do it the right way? How do you keep that going?
Well, we have weekly coaches meetings. And then when the whole thing occurred with George Floyd, the very next available day, I think it was a Monday, that we had an extra coaches call to talk about it, to ensure that we're trying to listen, trying to provide guidance, and asking them to engage with their students. I mean, they wanted to get to their students immediately, and we encourage them to do that and try to create some opportunities to talk and opportunities to listen. And so there's a lot of us in leadership positions that really need to learn a lot, listen a lot, and we need to provide those opportunities for those that really want to speak to do that. And I think our coaches have done a very good job in doing that. Our campus community has been behind it. I know that Chief Perry has spoken with a number of our teams. In fact, we had a call with all of our student athletes, and he was on that call as well. He spoke, as I said, to many of our teams already. I know that the individual teams have had meetings also. And I know Garrison has been a big part of those meetings and leading discussion with the basketball team. And each and every team, it's on their mind. So I'm delighted the coaches are providing that opportunity.
You are the athletic director. I'm not sure if you knew that. But that's
fact, Adam.
That's your job. You're in charge of athletics here at the University of North Carolina. And so you naturally care about athletics. De'Ami Brown had a tweet that had a picture of him scoring a touchdown, and he said something to the effect of, sometimes I wonder if this is the only time people care about me. We know how much you care about the student experience apart from the student athlete experience. When you see something like that, how does that hit you for De'Ami and other student athletes as a person, and what you want them to experience at Carolina?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, we want all of our students to know that we care. And particularly our student athletes, but there are 30,000 students here, and we want to develop those relationships. So each year when we have the opening meeting with all of our freshman student athletes or our first years and their parents, you know, we're all here to provide services to them. Their closest relationships are going to be with their teammates. Then it's going to be the assistant coach. Then it's going to be the head coach. The athletic administrators are, heck, we're lucky to be in the top 10. But, you know, that's not bad for me. And there's, you know, so anyhow. So it's a reminder of how important what we do every day is to our students. We need to make sure that they understand how much we care and how much we believe in them. And it doesn't matter if he scores a touchdown or not. We still care about his personal success. We're here to provide those opportunities to get a great education and have a great life. And, you know, Mac talks about that a lot. You know, it's not a four-year commitment. It's a 40-year commitment. Roy talks about it in the Carolina family. And those are the things that really resonate with a lot of our student athletes. And it's true because that's who we are. And we want them to know that we care.
Are there things that you have talked about or that you want to consider that the athletic department can do better in making sure all the student athletes understand that you're important for more than the points you can score or the rebounds you can get or goals you can convert?
Yeah, I think the biggest challenge in any department, any organization, large or small, is communication. You want to communicate as much as you possibly can. And when you have a breakdown or a lack of communication, doubt creeps in. And when you're separated, as we are now, that doubt is so easy to creep in. Because when you're not with your friends, not with your coaches, not being counseled, it's harder to keep those relationships going. It is, it's a challenge. I think we've talked about this before. Normally, in crisis, you come together. In this crisis, we've separated. So we're trying to over-communicate, but we're not going to reach everybody every time. So when we do get back together, we're going to continue to try to have this over-communication so people understand how much we care.
All right, let's move to name, image, and likeness, because you've been in the news some in that category this week with an article by Dennis Dodd that was pulling from a letter that you had written. Just give us your perspective on that and all the things that have happened since then.
Yeah, oh, I appreciate it. And name, image, and likeness is a very hot topic right now, a very important topic to a lot of our student athletes and to me. And the one thing about the article that I do want to clear up, if you will, is my frustration or concern is not about Indianapolis. I do have some questions and concerns about our governance structure of the NCAA. Representative governance hasn't worked the way I think it should be working. It's not quite as representative of the membership as it was intended to be when we passed it. And so the article talked a little bit more about that I was uncomfortable with than it did with name, image, and likeness. Name, image, and likeness, I certainly respect the opportunity for students to generate income on their name, image, and likeness. But I have no idea how we can integrate that into the recruiting process. And I'm also fearful that if we move money from an overall revenue sharing operation that we have today in intercollegiate athletics, where we generate as much as we can to provide as many opportunities as we can, that if we start to push the money toward those that generate it, at some point there'll be fewer opportunities for folks to compete. The great thing about intercollegiate athletics, particularly Title IX, is it has really grown opportunities for women. That growth for professional athletes on the women's side has not existed the way it has at the college level. So I do think we have our history to look back and say, okay, where does the money go in an open commercial market? Well, it's not going equitably to both genders. So I think that is a big concern of mine, of why I'm concerned from a recruiting standpoint and over time, the elimination of opportunities and the money moving to the sports that generate it.
We talked about this a couple weeks ago, and we said at that time, I think Bubba might be right, but I think the fact that he's saying opposite of what the current sort of groupthink is may catch him some heat, which, as you know, it has.
Yeah.
Do you think the public at large maybe misunderstands that you're not just responsible for football and men's basketball? If we were just talking about football and men's basketball, you would have a different feeling, I think. Is that right?
Well, and ironically, the position that I do have, and recognizing, as you said, that most people will have told me, hey, you know, sorry, buddy, but the train has left the station. And my response is, I know it has. I just hope it doesn't run me over. And so that is goal one, is to stay off the tracks. On top of that, I'm working on in two different parallels here, or I guess it's two positions that are parallel. It's not two parallels. You guys can sort through that distinction.
I was told there would be no geometry on this test.
Go through that distinction later. And so one is I am trying to stop the name, image, and likeness as it is currently proposed. I do have some ideas of things that I think make more sense to me. Maybe it does to the membership. Maybe it doesn't. In addition to that, I am trying to figure out what is the best strategy for Carolina. I want our student athletes to maximize the opportunities for them to monetize name, image, and likeness if it is successfully passed by the NCAA. I hope it's not, but I also have to have that plan ready to go, and I'm doing that. And because I don't want to get behind any of our competitors. I don't want our coaches to be behind. But philosophically, I want to go in a different direction. So I feel a little bit duplicitous when I do that. But I feel like it's my responsibility to have both scenarios covered as we move forward.
What are some of those ideas that you have that you're not sure everybody else would agree with?
Well, the first one I always thought was kind of the low-hanging fruit, if you will, which is, and I've talked about revenue share previously, I would love to see us go back and get a video game. I mean, I think that our students would like to be in it. I think that our fans would like to have it. I know my own children used to play it. And when I was at Ball State in Tulsa, I'll tell you, those kids that didn't go to the NBA or the NFL, which is most of them, they love being in it. And so I would go to that. I don't think you need a union to have that. I think you can be a voluntary association. If you opt in, you're in. If you don't, you're not. I think that that will create new revenue, and that new revenue could be allocated to the student athletes, maybe post-graduation or post-eligibility. You'd give it over, and you could figure out a formula to do that. I would actually be in favor of jersey sales. Put a name on it. Put a number on it. At that point, you'd have to work with your licensing department and share the revenue between the university logos and the individual's name. And to me, those are both new revenue sources that wouldn't impact the revenue that's already coming in. As I mentioned, if you move the existing sponsorship dollars from the department to the individual, that's going to shrink opportunities. This one is actually increasing revenue, and that revenue would be given to those that generated it. And it would not involve the recruiting process because you wouldn't be represented by others to try to develop your brand.
As you just mentioned, this is a time when instead of being able to come together, we're all apart. In a world that's so much about 280 characters or however many a tweet is these days or just a headline, are you concerned about how student athletes will see your position when they don't listen to the full thing like this, or they don't read the full story and they just see the headline that says, oh, Bubba Cunningham's against me?
Oh, very much so, which is why I called some of our coaches this morning. but, you know, I did go when this started 5-6 months ago, and I met with our student athletes. I talked with our SAC representatives. I talked to individual teams to try to work through the iterations of what this could look like, get their feedback, you know, and to a person, they understood and they paid attention to it. But also to a person, if you said, okay, who in here would like to have more money? Well, almost all, if not all, their hands went up. So it's an easy thing to say, hey, how's this going to work? But then when you go through all the implications of what it might look like, how it would impact your neighbor and all of those other things, then it became a better discussion. So as I mentioned before, they may not read the whole story, which is why I wanted to get to the coaches and say, I am 100% for our student athletes, and I will help you recruit. But I don't think this is good for the educational model of intercollegiate athletics. So I'm going to work in two different worlds at trying to achieve some results.
Bubba, at least last thing for me on this topic. It seems like one of the big words that I've heard you say a couple times and even reading the article is opportunity. And you were not against, say, the NBA G League opportunity if guys wanted to do that coming out of high school. It's more making sure that universities still have the finances to provide large numbers of opportunities across multiple sports. Is that a fair statement?
Absolutely. Thanks for reminding me. Yes. I mean, I have four things that are critically important to me. It's education. Make sure we provide the education we promise when we recruit them. Provide the maximum number of opportunities for them to compete. Create choices. We need more choices for kids. I love the G League, and it provides choices for kids that don't want to go to college, become a professional, generate the income, and that would be terrific. And then the last thing we're talking about here is the commercial activity. How do we organize ourselves? Because there's a lot of commercial activity associated with what we do, and then allocated against our priorities. And mine are education opportunities. Others have different priorities, but that's what I feel strongly about. And that's what I think this educational model is about.
In addition to these other two enormous issues that are currently on your desk, you're trying to get an entire athletic department back on campus at some point in the next few months. What has that process been like? Where do we stand in that process, and what comes next?
Well, we've worked hand in hand with the campus community. So as Kevin Guskiewicz, and I just give him a ton of credit for his patience, his intelligence for gathering all the experts and providing input to him so he can make some decisions and some recommendations. And so he, you know, very early on, he was advised, make your decisions in late May, because we'll know so much more. We do know a lot more, but we're going to know a lot more in the next 3 months as well. So he's created the roadmap to reopen campus. I shouldn't say reopen. We've been open the entire time in different ways, but to re-energize the campus and bring people back. Our roadmap, we announced that a day after the campus roadmap. It parallels everything that they're doing. We're phasing people in. Football being our biggest program, they're coming back first. We will test every coach and every student athlete as they come back. We will keep them in pods as they work out and practice early. We'll begin to integrate them over time. Football, men's and women's basketball come back early. Our fall sports come back next. And then all of the other sports come when the rest of the student body comes. So it is not exactly an experiment, if you will, but I have heard the researchers talk about this experiment, which is doing this over time, tracking it, and making sure that we have the most safe environment we can possibly have for student athletes, staff. And then ultimately, now we're just beginning to work on a plan for our fans to return to events.
I was going to ask you about that, Bubba, and I know you don't know the answer, but I've got to ask you anyway. Kind of where are we in that regard right now? Do you have any thoughts on where fans may stand at this point?
Well, we're planning. So we're planning for multiple scenarios, but Rick Steinbacher and John Bruner have really done a terrific job in collecting all the information that is out there, whether it's a professional league, whether it's the conference, the NCAA, what their guidances are. But the thing that really will drive our decision-making, one, is the campus community, because we're going to be in lockstep with them. But two, what is the town government suggesting? What's the county suggesting? What's the state suggesting? And we'll follow those guidelines. So the next 3 months, obviously, things will change, but we don't have a big home game. Football is the third week of September, so we do have some time. It will change, but we're looking at every piece of the equation from the time you arrive on campus. Where do you park? How do you enter the stadium? Where do you sit? What do concessions look like? What do restroom lines look like? All of those things. Do you have to wear a mask? Do we take a temperature before you come in? And so all of those are on the table. But right now it's premature to say this is going to be the plan. I am really hopeful that we will have fans. We'll have a lot of fans at our events. I think we will. But, you know, the experts will advise us on that, and we'll certainly follow their guidance.
Is there a timeline for when you want to try to finalize that, since you can't just make the plan and the next day it happens? There's all sorts of logistics and tickets and things like that. Have you got a time frame in mind?
No, we really don't. You know, I guess that's the first time I've really been asked that question. I mean, it's a really good interview. I would probably say we'd have to notify our fans by mid-August. One, how many tickets do you get? Where are you going to sit? Things of that nature. And we had 94% renewal of our season tickets this year. So, I mean, that's fantastic. So, you know, it'll have to be, mid-August to answer your question.
Bubba, last thing, at least for me, how, I guess, satisfying is the word I'm looking for. Is it for you? You said lockstep with the university a couple times and working so closely. I think it's fair to say earlier in your tenure, maybe there was some friction between Carolina Athletics and the University of North Carolina with everything that was going on. Seemed like you made that a big priority early in your tenure here to mend that relationship as best you could from your side. How satisfying is it that now those two entities seem to be working much more symbiotically?
Yeah, one of the very first things that we did, and we created the strategic plan for our department, kind of our roadmap back then, was alignment. We wanted to stay aligned with the university. And any of the tension that existed really was unintentional by everyone. But I think it's very important to stay aligned. I mean, we are an incredibly visible part of the university. We're certainly not the most important part of the university. I mean, the core educational mission is what we're all about. But we're so visible. So we want to stay aligned. Our students want a great education. The other students want to be a part of the athletic experience. They don't get to compete, but they want to come and cheer on their friends. So it's really important to me. I mean, that's why college athletics exists. It exists to make the university better, make it a better educational experience. So you can only do that if you're completely aligned with the educational mission. And our coaches are aligned, our students are aligned, and I think that's why we've had so much success over the years.
We thank Bubba for his time. And Adam, something I will give Bubba a lot of credit for is he talked about communication. I feel like he communicates. I feel like he does the best he can, considering the time demands that he is under, to try to give the message to coaches, athletes, fans, continue to make sure that people are as informed as they can be.
It's not easy to take the position he's taken on a couple of these issues, especially name, image, and likeness. You can't do that if you're just trying to win a popularity contest, which he clearly, as he said to us, understands. And I also think there was that concern when Bubba Cunningham first came to Carolina that how much does he really know about Carolina? And even you and I went and talked to him the very first night he got hired.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I have a lot to learn. When he sits there, I see and hear someone who fully gets Carolina, and he's trying to do the best thing for Carolina. And that's what you want your athletic director to do in a thoughtful, smart way.
Before we keep moving, a reminder about our friends at UNC Healthcare, dedicated to caring for champions of all kinds to help keep you in the game. UNCHealthcare.org/sports. Adam, to your list.
What's on the top of Adam's list? Brought to you by Top of the Hill, where Tar Heels come to celebrate.
I thought we'd continue to keep things light and talk about the Electoral College, maybe a few other issues. No. On the list, Jones, I know you know this, but we owe it to the fans of Ultimate who want to know that Ann Wirth from Carolina won the Callahan Award.
Yes, she did.
Big award in the world of Ultimate. Thank you, Kate Leslie.
Ring it up!
Of course, the Ultimate seasons were also interrupted, just like all the other spring sports.
Shaking
seasons.
My fist at you. Coronavirus.
100% pod listeners add to the list. Annie McLeod, Courtney Pagano, John Howes. This one was a Twitter handle, so I'm not sure what the person, Susan Yowd, maybe? So thanks to all those folks for listening. And speaking of the 100% podcast listeners, whoa, David Staley and Lindsey Carroll putting in some work on the Carolina podfans.com website, which we did not know existed it existed.
Yeah, we really didn't know anything about it.
But there's a lot of good stuff there that actually was helpful to me.
I'm going to it right now.
I sometimes need reminders of what has occurred on the pod, and that's a good way to do it. And it explains some of the questions we frequently get about, you know, where did this Big Grits thing come from? So really appreciate them working on that. And there's a listing of all the 100% pod fans.
Yeah.
Now, it's not David and Lindsay's fault if you've listened to 100% of the pods and you're not on there. It's our fault because I think they got that list by listening to the pod.
Whoa, you can get a ringtone on here?
Yeah. Yeah, the Pod 200 song is on there.
What if that was your ringtone?
Your ringtone could be the Pod 200 song.
Ooh, that's funny.
There's also, what's the one that's like, Funny Jones or something? What does it say?
I don't know.
Yeah, on the ringtones.
You want me to go to downloads, Adam?
Yeah.
Excited Jones.
Excited Jones. Yeah. What do you think that is?
I don't know.
This case.
So again, it's CarolinaPodFans.com. And honestly, we mean this. Adam and I have nothing to do with this website, but we think it's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it's my homepage, but other than that, I have nothing to do with it. This came out yesterday. I wanted to get your thoughts on this. It seems like Major League Baseball doesn't really know what they're doing about really anything. And this is another thing on that list. So apparently, according to Bruce Levine, MLB has told all their team announcers that they'll be doing all the road games remotely. So, of course, no one knows if there are ever going to be any games or even where they'll be. But if there are games, then the team announcers are going to do all the road games either from a studio or from their home, I guess. I don't know where that doesn't seem like a good choice.
Yeah, and we've talked about this some before in the lens of ESPN doing remote broadcast. It seems to happen a lot in early season basketball games where the announcers, you may have some of the technical crew on site, but the announcers aren't on site. And I think, Adam, it just comes down to a – now, and I understand in this instance, you may – you're addressing this because of safety and total number of bodies there and social distancing and all those things. I think the fear becomes, from a broadcasting side, is that it becomes eventually a discussion about, are you willing to sacrifice quality – for saving some money, because that's why you do it, is you do it to save money. You don't have to pay for travel expenses or hotels or whatever for your announcers. And so I think if that becomes more accepted, I think that's a thumbs down from me, because you cannot do as good a job from a studio calling a game that's happening thousands of miles away as you can if you're sitting in that stadium or arena or whatever, because you don't have a feel for the game. You don't have that the feel of the crowd. You don't have a firsthand view of what's happening. You haven't been able to talk to people on site. There's just things that are different. And so, can I sit here and watch Carolina play on TV and tell you what's happening? Yeah, but it's not going to be 50% of the quality as if you're there.
That is a decision made by someone who's never done it and thinks, well, you just call it off the TV. And if there are MLB games, I assume there will be fewer fans, which if that's the case, then what we're going for on TV is bringing fans inside the ballpark who can't go. How are you going to accomplish that when the announcers aren't inside the ballpark? That's who sets the scene.
I honestly think, and I don't just say this because I do it, I think the broadcast, both radio and TV, of games this upcoming year, if we can assume that games, and now these are all assumptions, if we can assume that games will occur, but we can also assume that games will not occur in the way that they have occurred in the past. I think the people that are there telling you what's going on are going to be even more important to both tell you about what is different, you know, what's unique about what's happening. And there are going to be some people who just aren't comfortable coming back right now. And that's fine. It's totally an individual choice. But they may still be really interested in how the Tar Heels, for our sake, are doing. And so they're going to have that outlet to find out what's happening because they want to know. And so I think the broadcast of the game will be even more impactful this year than it normally is, because I think there will be more information to give, relevant information to give, and I think there'll be more people seeking out that information.
Major League Baseball has not distinguished itself these last few weeks.
No.
That's another step in the wrong direction. Two more things on the list. One, an email from Alan Huffman. He needs a ruling, Jones.
Let me put on my Judge Judy cape.
Alan,
It's a robe.
I was going to say, you're not Harry Potter.
Yeah, it's not just the back.
Or is it? Alan started listening to the pod after the 2017 championship game when you interviewed Roy Williams. He became an avid listener and eventually went back and listened, starting with the first pod, and caught up with everything he had missed. Mm. I work at a bank, says Alan, and normally listen at work, but all the payroll loans we receive needed my full focus, so I recently got behind. Just this afternoon, he was able to catch up, and he has just discovered the 100% listener list on CarolinaPodFans.com. Alan has listened to every pod, every Roy Williams and Mac Brown, Larry Fedora live, and the live show the last 2 weeks. However, he has not listened to all the Carolina Classic games, as he is taking his time watching them at home while he listens. Huh. Is Alan considered 100% listener?
Alan, we deem you 110% listener.
Alan says, if so, add me to the list. If not, tell the other 100% pod listeners I'm coming for them and we'll be there soon. Also, fun fact about Alan Jones, he's from Indiana and ran against Dylan Sorensen in high school.
Wow.
Yeah. He says he ran against him, parentheses, very far behind. I never really got to talk to him, but he always seemed like a nice guy. He would be an awesome pod guest. And you'll like this part, Jones. Mm. As a former high school and college cross-country and track athlete, I just wanted to say,
brag about it, huh?
I was really impressed with Jones's time when he did the mile. That is a really good time, even without having to focus on dribbling the ball, recording yourself, and timing yourself. Good work, Jones.
One-man band, Alan. That's how we do it.
Now, last thing on my list is, Jones, it's June.
Yeah, it is.
It's time to start thinking about the potties.
Holy smokes. It is time to start thinking about the potties. Adam, I'm going to tell you something that's going to make it feel like it's been a long time since the last potties. The James Sperling interview is an eligible interview on this year of Interview of the Year.
Yes.
Adam, think about where we were recording the pod at the beginning of said potty cycle.
Yeah.
And now where we are.
Yeah.
I honestly, Adam, we have had so many good interviews this year because of the people, not Adam and me. Well, not Adam. But because of the guests. I've got to go. That might be the most heated category we've ever had.
At one point, we had some.
No, I think it's a good idea. Break it up into maybe athlete and non-athlete category.
Right.
I think that might be a good idea.
Are coaches in the athlete category or are they separate?
Well, now you're just making it tough.
So, well, these are the difficult decisions that have to be made about the potties.
I think we should have a Best Roadhouse Challenge potty this year.
Yeah, I think that's. Yeah, I think so.
But where do we send the potty?
Mr. Matthew Broderick, care of.
Okay, can I ask a question out loud about the Roadhouse Challenge that you and I have been kicking around off the air?
Sure.
Should we make the Roadhouse Challenges separate podcasts, Adam? So there's no Tar Heel talk on the Roadhouse Challenge, unless it just happens to come up in the course of said Roadhouse Challenge. But we wouldn't add the Roadhouse Challenge as part of a Carolina Insider. We would still put it out through the Carolina Insider, but it would just be a Roadhouse Challenge.
So in this situation, let's say that it's October.
Sure.
And I'm listening to my Carolina Insider podcast, and it's Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Rebecca.
I'm Rebecca Black, and I am wishing you the best weekend you've ever had in your life. See you later, Big Grits.
And is the podcast that comes to my feed, do I get a Carolina Insider and a Roadhouse Challenge, or is the Carolina Insider for that day the Roadhouse Challenge?
I think it's two.
So you're saying we'd be doing more work.
More work, Adam.
Well, you know what I was thinking?
we need more Carolina Insider.
I was just thinking the other day, I think this podcast thing might catch on and we should try to do more of them.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't be bound.
Well, but I don't think it would be for us. I don't think it would necessarily be a lot different,
right?
Because I just think we'd be sending out
right
separately. And honestly, I don't know if it would make a huge difference. I think it would just be, you wouldn't get like a 2.5 hour podcast. You would get our normal, say, hour and 15 to an hour and 30 minute podcast. And then you'd get the Roadhouse Challenge as a separate one on its own.
Well, and we wouldn't have to figure out what interview to put with a Roadhouse Challenge, which would make our lives better.
Maybe we should put a poll out for that.
Twitter poll.
Starting, maybe we'll put that out tomorrow once this comes out.
So Friday.
Yeah. Today.
Today.
Yeah. See, this is how Adam and I work out things. We talk it out.
I don't want to bias the votes, but I'm going to speak my mind.
Yeah, please.
I think that's better. And so this Roadhouse Challenge pod wouldn't be bound by the Tuesday-Friday constraints.
Right.
It could hit you on a Wednesday.
Yeah, it could be any time. Anytime.
And then would we say we're going to do a certain amount? Like you're going to get one a month? Or you just get them when you get them?
I think at least for now, we just get them. We just put them out when we get them put out. Because I like the Roadhouse Challenge. And Adam, our analytics suggests that folks like the Roadhouse Challenge.
Right.
But I can also understand that there may be some people who don't want that. That they want...
They don't even want this.
Right. They don't want this salad if they can't have a fork.
Yeah. They want the pod, but they don't want that pod.
Right. They may want Tariel stuff, but not that. And so we just give that as more of a separate option where you're still on the feed, and if you see it, you say, I don't want that one. Or maybe you do.
I also think that makes the Roadhouse Challenges more timeless because there's no other Carolina content on there.
Don't have to find them either.
Yeah, I can listen to Jones and Adam talk about Varsity Blues anytime without having to worry about what's up with this name, image, and likeness.
Okay. Well, Adam, as with things like the length of the How Can You Justify That song, we will put this to Twitter and we will see what the folks say.
Either way, there's going to be a Roadhouse Challenge soon.
The Roadhouse, yes. And the Roadhouse Challenge isn't going away.
Oh, no.
We're just trying to figure out how we can. We want to present it to you in the best way possible.
Yes.
That's all. Okay, Adam, I have one topic, and it really has nothing to do with anything.
Oh, good.
And sometimes in the past, I've done these, and they eventually get taken out because I think they don't make any sense. But I don't know if you're going to know this answer more than I hope someone can help me with this answer. So, Adam, it's getting towards the summertime. We're into the early portion of the summer.
Summertime.
And it's getting hot. But as you know, Adam, a lot of the times, it's not just the straight heat, but it's the humidity.
That's right.
And I know people make fun of that statement, but it's true. 100 degrees in Phoenix is different than 100 degrees in North Carolina.
Is this going to have something to do with dew point?
It is.
Oh, whoa.
Adam, I don't understand what dew point is. People always say that the dew point is whatever. And I know when the dew point is higher, it seems like I'm hotter outside. But I don't get what is the dew point. So I've looked it up. Adam, I looked it up.
Okay.
It says on Wikipedia,
right,
that the dew point is the temperature to which air must be cooled to become saturated with water vapor. When cooled further, the airborne water vapor will condense to form liquid water or dew. When air cools to its dew point through contact with a surface that is colder than the air, water will condense on the surface. Adam, I think if you gave me each one of those words individually, I would know what they meant. Put all of it together, and I'm not sure. So, like, when it's 72 degrees and the dew point is, like, 70 or something, why am I so hot outside? I don't understand it. I don't get it. And I don't think I'm dumb in general, but I do think I'm dumb about dew points.
As many of us are. So I've done some research of my own
since
you've been talking.
Yeah.
So dew point is the temperature at which the air is saturated with 100% relative humidity.
Okay.
So it would stand to reason, would it not, that if the dew point was 72, and it was 72, that's really hot because it's also really humid.
So I'd just be walking in water vapor at that point.
Yeah, has that ever occurred?
Not that I know of.
So you're saying my theory may not be 100%.
So this is what I need. This is what I need.
Right.
Like the Sasson brothers or somebody out there who's smart. I need an explain it like I'm five on dew points. Like if you are explaining dew points to a kindergartner, because that's my understanding of dew points, it's kindergarten level. I need you to explain it to me in the most dumbed down terms possible so that I can understand.
I bet Xena would know.
Too busy out in space.
I bet they don't have a dew point in space. In space, no one can hear the dew point.
So if someone could get on that, I'd appreciate it.
I bet there's a meteorologist listening.
Maybe we could use our connections with our boy Bill Leslie, and he can help hook us up with a meteorologist, and we can get him here on the pod to explain dew points.
I think that's, we could call Bill Leslie right now, I bet, and he would just patch us through to Bob DeBartoleben, and he would make all this crystal clear. And I've got a couple other questions as long as we have a meteorologist on the line. Send in your weather questions.
Yeah.
There's going to be a whole separate pod about weather.
You think I'm joking? Well, I would happily have a meteorologist on here to explain dew points. So, okay, it's really important. We need you to vote on this poll if you have an opinion when it comes to the Roadhouse Challenge. Because we may or may not have a Roadhouse Challenge that we could use in some way depending on how this poll comes out. So we need you to vote on the poll. It's already out. Carolina.
Today.
Yeah. Today, which is tomorrow, which is Friday.
Friday.
For us. But for you, it's now. At Carolina underscore pod, we will we'll leave it up there for several days. Now, the guests that we ended up having today were not guests that we had thought we were going to be using. So we still have a lot of guests. So we're going to be back soon. Because quite frankly, we need to use our guests' interviews that we have.
And also, as you just heard, we're trying to do more pods.
Yeah. So, Adam, I didn't even ask you. Please forgive me. Anything else?
No, sir.
Okay. We're going to let Garrison Brooks. We're going to let Howard Lee. We're going to let Bubba Cunningham. And we're going to let the RZA get us out of here on the latest edition of the Carolina Insider.
Hey, this is Garrison Brooks. I'll holler at you later, Big Grits.
I'm Howard Lee. So I'll see you later, Big Grits.
Hi, it's Bubba Cunningham, and I can just say, see you later, Big Grits.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat grits for dinner.
Pound box of sugar and a stick of margarine. A hot pot of grits kept my family from starving. Steamy hot meal served less than 5 minutes. Big silver pot boiling water salt in it. House full of brothers and sisters, the pot's missing. Pilgrim on a box on the stove in the kitchen.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat.
See you later, Big Grit.
The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Tar Heel Sports Network.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on Auto Trader. Just you wait. Auto Trader.